Tadhg Byrne, I think, has been incredible. For me...
Tadhg Byrne. How often are you doing this with Shawnee and you haven't got your Irish pronunciations right?
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Well, it's a great day here at House of Rugby. No Sean O'Brien, but instead we've got Jack Willis. How good, mate? How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you very much, mate. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to see you. How's everything today? A train journey a bit difficult, was it?
Or? Yeah, a bit of a nightmare getting down here. I think all the trains are sort of flooding into London, prioritising the main routes. But out in a little village, Mrs. had to cop me out to help me get down here today, which was handy. But yeah, got there in the end. I sound a little bit hoarse, mate. What's going on with the voice?
Yeah, I've been on a stag do in the beautiful location of Clacton-on-Sea. Yeah, highbrow. Sorry to anyone from Clacton-on-Sea who saw me. It wasn't at my finest, but yeah, a bit struggling today.
Shane Horgan, Leinster and Ireland winger. How you getting on, mate?
Nice to be here as the, you know, contractually mandated Irishman. Now the Shawnee's not around, so good to be here.
Well, it's a much nicer surprise for us. You know, Shawnee, as much as he's a funny man, he takes his toll on everyone, I think. So it's good to see you anyways.
Yeah, no, nice to be here. Thanks for having me. And in the middle of a Lions versus Sharks series. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And did you watch the game yesterday?
I did. I watched it, the repeat version. It's been a weird series so far, and you know the fact that they're playing the same opposition, you know, 4 days turnaround. I actually thought the Sharks did unbelievably well for having. I think they had four guys that played. The rest were what you're in effect a sort of second Sharks team, and they really put it to the Lions. I think there was, you know, after that first half, I'd say there was some stern enough words at halftime. And obviously the sending off wasn't great for anyone, but something I think the Lions needed that game, a little bit of a wake up call for them, especially around physicality. I didn't think they were physical enough. I was a bit surprised at the scrum as well. You know how dominant the Springbok scrum is going to be, how they base everything around it. They don't, and you know, the Sharks held their own, and it meant that some of their big carriers were getting right into the Lions and making big yardage. So I think it'll be a bit of a wake up call for them second time around.
We'll go into it more detail later on. I mean, you've got your notepad here.
Exactly.
Scribble down a few players.
I'm glad someone's prepared for this,
yeah,
by the way.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah,
I haven't been hard drinking for 2 days in Clacton.
Yeah, exactly. And that says it all, really. But just in terms of the tour, obviously it's been pretty tough so far. But everyone wants to see the rugby. What are your thoughts in terms of the tour at the moment?
Yeah, it is difficult, you know, because there's this much bigger situation going around the world that everyone's been living through, and you know, it's you know, even more intense in South Africa. But I do think you know, sport and rugby is escapism for people, and as long as the it's not endangering anyone, and I don't think it is. I think they should. I think they're right in really trying to aim to get this test series away. And listen, if that means, you know, some of these warm-up games are compromised a bit, I think, you know, that's all right. Listen, it's not ideal to have two Sharks games off the back, but they did serve a purpose, you know. So we do know a little bit more about the Lions. I think Gatland probably knows a little bit more about a number of players. And, you know, I'd certainly like to see this series go ahead. And, you know, selfishly as a supporter, yeah. And it's going to be different, right? So you're going to have guys that aren't as well prepared on both sides of the ledger. So it is going to be a very unique test series. The one thing that I put myself in the position of a player, and you might never get this opportunity again to play for the Lions. So I kind of think almost they deserve an opportunity to play the series.
I think that's the big thing for me, is that these lads have worked hard for the lads that haven't been involved before for 4 years straight to get to this point. I think it would be a shame if it didn't go ahead. I think the worry for me is, will we see all three tests played? I don't know. It depends what's going on in the South Africa camp. Sort of came out today who had the cases and things like that. And it's just a worry that won't be sort of under control by the time the main tests come along. But I think, yeah, let's hope that we keep our fingers crossed it can go ahead. I think whether there's fans there or not, it's still special to put on that jersey for those lads. And some of the lads being fortunate enough to be in camp with someone like Tom Curry, who's been incredible for 4 years. And I think he deserves to be able to wear that shirt in a test match, and hopefully in the coming weeks he can get that chance.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think, you know, those, you may only get one opportunity to be a Lion and play a test series, and for that reason I would like to see it go ahead. But and it is going to be a unique series, and you know, everyone says, oh listen, you know, Lions is this and that. Lions is whatever the Lions is on that year. Do you know? Mm. So there is hurdles on both sides, so both for the South Africans, and there is definitely a concern about whether the series can go ahead, given the number of outbreaks. But if there's a chance, I think they should be aiming for it.
Yeah, and just on that, you were in the Six Nations with England when Eddie had to isolate. What was that like in terms of a coach? Because obviously the South African head coach has got COVID and will have to self-isolate now. What was it like in terms of the coaching? You know,
so it was the first couple of days of the Six Nation camp, really, where he was sort of coming out of the end of his isolation. But the first couple of days, there was a couple of sort of remote Zoom call meetings with him talking to the group, and then also messages from the other coaching staff, the leadership group of players as well. And I think it's the time for everyone else to step up and adapt. I think it's weird. The weird thing for me, I remember as a youngster or in the academy or anything like that, for us it used to throw us off so much if the game was 50-50 if because of weather or snow or something like that. Whereas now it's just like every other week, every game that comes, I think players have learned to adapt and be ready for anything. And I think the Lions have been great. They've adapted. That sale, the Sharks were great to be able to play them again. But I think the guys that need to worry is South Africa. They've only just come out of their isolation period. They've all been locked in their rooms. It's going to be tough to sort of reconvene and get back going after against the Lions squad that have been playing games at least.
I was going to say, I mean, the coaching is here and there. It doesn't really matter too much. Players will get out there and prepare as well as they can, and you know. They're very experienced. They've got so many leaders in South Africa. That's fine, I guess. I think it's more preparation-wise. Who's struggling more here? You know, the Lions may not have as many games. South Africa have, you know, not played for 2 years until that Georgia game. And another game they're going to miss out on preparation-wise.
But also not just not playing. That's one thing. But I'm not sure what their, you know, training schedule is, or what they're allowed to do, or what they will be allowed to do, especially with these new outbreaks. Is it, you know, a sort of total isolation in their rooms? You
yeah,
know,
they've, like we they've saw. Been in they've been in their own hotel rooms for the last 10 days. And you think that's going to have an effect on the group. Obviously, the Lions will be under a pretty tight bubble, but there's going to be socialisation in and around training and things like that. They're going to be able to build the sort of group camaraderie that you want for South Africa. As you say, it's been a long time since they won that World Cup. Yeah. They obviously ride on that for a little while, but it takes a lot of work to go up against the Lions and win a test series. So I think there's a few new players in there. Quite a few Premiership lads have sort of earned their opportunity and gone across into the squad. It's an interesting one, how it's going to sort of play out in that first game.
Even conditioning wise, you know, what can they do? They're going to be off the pace a little bit. You know, I don't know sure what they can do in the hotel rooms, or they have access to gyms or whatever, but you know, you got to think they're going to be undercooked.
Well, I mean, the only way you get match fit is from playing games. We all know that. You can go on the treadmill and run all day, but it's getting used to game intensity, and that for both teams in a sense, though, because the Lions have, you know, they're doing everything possible and they're trying their best, but is there going to be even more competition in training now because of that? Or, you know, does it really mean it's a problem preparation for them as well?
That match fit thing is really interesting, because you'll remember this from, you know, when you're doing your pre-season training and you're absolutely killing yourselves and you think you're the fittest you've ever been, but you go out and play the match, you start cramping up 20 minutes into it.
Yeah, you can't breathe.
What's going on here? And so it is a different, you know, type of training. But, you know, with the Lions, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the key factors are in selection. Whether, you know, Gatland is saying, you know, it'll be very much on what these performances are and the performances up to the first test, or is he going to, you know, rely on, I suppose, the body of work that the players have. So I think Conor Murray is the perfect example of that. Now, I don't think Conor's had a brilliant 18 months, but by any measure, he had a very good game against England in the last game. All of a sudden, he's the, you know, Lions captain and starting without, I'd say, a huge amount of brilliant form. But I do think Gatland is going to revert back to who he trusts. And that's why I think you'll see a lot of sort of Welsh players in it.
I think it's interesting though, because obviously you're saying about sort of players he trusts. Someone who's obviously just been called into the squad, Marcus Smith. Finn Russell, unfortunately, out with a bit of an injury. Hopefully he'll still be fit at some point in the tour. But Marcus Smith sort of played a couple of games for England, been playing really well for Harlequins. I think, for me, I think it's the exact right thing to do, bringing him into the squad. But it's interesting to sort of see, you say, sort of going back to the players he trusts, I think he still wants a bit of a spark there, bringing in Smith. I don't know what you think about
I think it was him, I think it was a really smart move, and he's right to do it. I think it was probably based on a number of factors. One, that he's playing brilliantly, you know, the semi-final, the final, you know, a couple of games with England. He's the bright young thing. He's, you know, he's going to have a brilliant career with England, I think. But it also is not going to disrupt the group. It's going to be very positive for the group. You bring in, you know, Sexton, and you would think that, yes, and Sexton, you know, was unlucky not to make it. But you bring him in, and all of a sudden, he's trying to boss training. You know that he's thinking, I want that test, first test shirt. You know, I've come in here, I'm going to sort of take over. And, you know, and that's legitimate for him to do it. But it's probably not what would be best for the group. You've got, you know, Mark's coming in, he'll come in, he'll be so delighted to be there. He kind of knows the role he'll have to play. He's, you know, Bigger's not going to feel that he's a threat to him, really. Farrell isn't going to feel he's a threat to him, I don't think, because, you know, he's not going to start in the, you know, he's not going to be a starting line in the first test. So it just keeps the balance, you know, very nice. And it's brilliant for him. There's nothing better for your development than to go on a Lions tour. And that's why, you know, from an Irish perspective, I was really disappointed when James Ryan didn't go on it, because he's going to be a future Ireland captain. But the experience that you gain from going on the Lions, I remember in 2001 when I was playing for Ireland at the time, didn't make that Lions tour to Australia. But I remember, you know, Ronan, who was, you know, captain the same day as me, he went over, and, you know, with Brian, and there's a few others. But he really came back a different player. Mm. Like, you know, just looked on things totally different. You're just exposed to a, you know, a higher level of rugby, a higher level of rugby intellect, different types of training, and it really changes you. And I even after 2005, I thought that the way I started to think about rugby and training was really different as well, mainly because we were so small and everybody else seemed to be so massive. I was like, what the hell are we doing in the gym that we're not doing what anybody else here is doing? That's for sure.
Yeah, but if Bigger got injured though, do you think they still would have called up Marcus, or do you think someone like Ford, you know, Sexton, then Sheedy, you know, someone else would have been called up?
Yeah, I think he may have had a look at Sexton then. I think he may have, you know, deliver, I think, a sort of similar game plan. I think it was one or other of those guys, and I, you know, to be honest with you, I think Bigger was probably the right selection. You know, he's played so well for so long. Sexton's been up and down. His injury profile hasn't been great, and, you know, he hasn't played a lot of rugby in the last few months. So it would have been difficult to select him, but he might have gone with him if it was Bigger. Maybe just, I don't know, if you were looking for a player to start the first test, where you would go, you know, whether Marcus would naturally be a natural fit. But I think Farrell's probably next up if there was an injury to Bigger.
I think for me, sometimes it's looking at the wider picture of the whole group, and someone like Marcus Smith coming in, the energy he's going to bring to the whole group, and pushing in training, even if he's just running the non-23 for a couple of weeks, having someone like him testing the defence is really going to push them on. I think you just sort of, watching the game was quite funny, the England game, seeing him come off. So it looked like he sort of dragged off, wasn't it? Sort of Shepherd's Crook grip again, sort of dragged off the field. He was straight into the tunnel. He said that he didn't know what was going on. He was terrified that he was in trouble. But he literally just absolutely baffled and couldn't believe it. And I think seeing that, someone that's so full of energy, so full of life, that's going to go into that now. He's probably on the flight today or tomorrow, and it's just going to be full of energy and be great for the group.
I love it. It's properly romantic. Do you know, there's properly something beautiful about it. And if you look at the last couple of months that he's had, have been, you know, it's schoolboy's own stuff. It's, you know, it's dream come true. He's just been so amazing.
He's making defenders look like school kids. That's
He really is. He's so brilliant. And he's just gone to another level. And you don't get this whole other things of the Lions bolter. It doesn't exist anymore, really. You know, you're not going to have someone really who's not well known, because you've got the domestic competitions and you've got Europe. If you're not playing, you know, in those areas very well for a period, no one's going to take the, they're not going to take the risk on you, or you know, you're going to be an established international. So the idea of the bolter doesn't really exist anymore in the modern Lions. This is as close to a bolter as you're going to get. You know, he and his experience, you know, the delight on his face, and you know what he must be experiencing now. It's, you know, it's a proper beautiful rugby story.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic for him, as we established. He'll bring so much energy, and he'll just go out there and train so hard, or soak it all up. And you know what? If there is injuries, maybe he will get in the team. But he's match fit, he's ready, he's in the form of his life, and I think it's so exciting for him to be involved. But I also think, though, late additions now, people coming, it's such a small amount of time now before that first test that it would be very hard for someone to come in now and expect them to get up to up to speed and start in that first test.
What do you think of someone like Marcus Smith? What do you think he can bring to the group? How do you think he plays that can sort of be an advantage for the Lions, even if it is the midweek games, Goody?
Yeah, I think Marcus is such a talent. We've seen the glimpses and the areas where he's so good with his footwork and his ability to beat defenders. But what I've been so impressed with him over the last 6 months or so, this year particularly, is he's mixed his kicking game really well with his running game. And when there's a chance on, he will take it. He sees it, he wants to go wide, and he goes for it. He doesn't think about it or hesitate. He just goes with conviction. And what I think he brings to any team is the ability of a fly half, a bit like Finn in the sense that he can beat you one-on-one, but he's so elusive. Like, I think people can't grasp how good he is as a runner. Like, his ability to, you line him up and it might be the third forward out, he's got him, and suddenly he just steps back on the inside to throw the inside ball, and he's gone past that forward already, and they're clutching, and then once he's in behind, he's electric. So I think he will be someone who will certainly test out all the other players defensively out there, or help out in that regard. But I think just as a threat, he's someone who's so dangerous.
Yeah, his variation of his game is really excellent, and that's, you know, that's really what you want from a good 10. It's, you know, kick, pass, run. You know, which of those decisions do you make? He makes them very instinctively, which is, you know, again, exactly what you want from your 10. And interesting, that comparison with Finn Russell, who is, again, I think a very sort of instinctive player in many ways, but sometimes I feel, you know, as if he feels there's an obligation on him to you know, throw that big ball over the top or do pull a rabbit out of a hat, which then can get you in trouble. And that's why it gets him in trouble, and that's why he's probably not going to be a Lions starter, because he doesn't always play what's in front of him. He has a pre-programmed idea to go, I'm going to do something special now, and does it. Whereas I think Marcus is still playing incredibly instinctively and picking the right options. He's playing what he sees in front of him, not, you know, a few phases back thinking, oh, when next time I get the ball, I'm going to try this. Because that's gets you in dangerous positions.
So the rugby over the last 5-6 days, I think it is, you know, what were your thoughts, Jack, in terms of who's standing out now, who's like looking fantastic, who looks like they're going to be a definite starter?
I think for me, the back three at the moment is incredibly competitive. It looks ridiculous. I think for me, Anthony Watson.
I didn't expect you to go to the
back. I
thought we might go back row here.
That is real confidence. Yeah. I'll run through the props in a couple of minutes. I really have my eye on.
I just think for me, a couple of players that stood out yesterday was Anthony Watson for me. I thought was fantastic, but Van der Merwe was ridiculous. I think again and again he's performed incredibly well, and it'll be hard not to pick him. But going back to sort of more where you feel I belong in the back row.
Didn't say that.
Yeah. Tad Byrne, I think, has been incredible. For me...
Tyg Byrne. How often are you doing this with Shawnee and you haven't got your Irish pronunciations right?
Tyg Byrne. He's been brilliant, I think. He's incredible over the ball at the breakdown. He's rapid as well and offers quite a lot in attack. I think at line-out time, which is probably an area that is going to be key going into the test, I think probably not dominated in any of these games enough yet to sort of how to the level they want to be dominating at. But for me, I think he's got to start six, and it'll be interesting to see how the sort of back row unfolds around that. But yeah, there's a couple of lads that have really started to put their marker down. It's been good to see.
I agree with that, with Tyg Byrne. Also, you know, I think he had a very solid game yesterday. He was very industrious, you know, got a couple of tries. You know, he's very good at the back end, the tackle, turning over, you know, the choke tackle, that side of things. Over the ball, brilliant. I'd like him to see him carry a little bit more aggressively. He's not that big carrier, but he's a very good link player. He's smart. He can drop that ball out behind. And we saw more of that, I think, in the opening couple of games of the tour than we certainly did last time out. But it's interesting then what happens to the rest of that back row if he goes in at six. You know, are you looking like, you know, does Tom Curry, is he, you know, you're looking at him as a seven. You think that, you know, Gatland's going to pick Faletau, but I don't think he's you know, been brilliant in form, but I think he will get picked there. But that's a really interesting area because, you know, if you don't have your back row tight against the Springboks, you'll probably lose the game, you know?
Mm. I think where the game's going to be won and lost is the breakdown and the physicality around that against South Africa. So for me, Tom Curry's got to be at seven. He's not had his chance properly to lay down a marker in a Lions shirt in these sort of games in the last couple of weeks, but I'd imagine he'll get a run out before the tests come around. And I think for me, he's earned that shirt over the last 4 years. It's not just these next couple of weeks. I think you can trust that when he go out there against South Africa that he'll deliver. And it will be interesting to see what they do at eight. I think Jack Conan's he's offered something a little bit different and actually sort of showed how dominant a carrier he can be. But for me, Curry at seven's got to be locked in. Hamish Watson's been fantastic, but Curry, for me, he's just got that extra level of physicality.
Well, yeah, Watson was soft in a couple of contacts against the Sharks at the on Saturday. And what it meant was he took the soak tackle and then it meant the next wave was very, you know, was really aggressive from the Sharks, and that was getting then into the 10 channel. So Bigger was having to make a tackle against a massive man, sort of one on one with a little bit of space either side of him after a really fast ruck, and you just can't have that. You can't get that situation. So you need to likely drop the South Africans at source and not allow those soak tackles. So I think, you know, Curry's the man for the job there. I think Ty Byrne is good in that area as well. The other thing that I found sort of interesting, I think Jamie George is having a good tour so far, but the lineouts last time against the Sharks were all to the front. And if you, I think was it against Japan in that first game at home, there was a lot going to the back, and I thought, well, actually, this is, you know, very progressive. I think it's probably what they need to do. I don't know if going to the front of the line out against the Springboks is, you know, listen, you'll get your win your ball, but what can you do with it?
Well, you know, as a back, that attacking wise from a line out is actually no point. If you go to the front of the line out as a fly half, fullback, whatever, you can't attack. It's impossible. The tail gunner, the seven or the hooker will be off the back. He'll be in your line straight away. The whole back line get up quicker. So you need to win the ball back or middle. And sometimes you'll lose a few doing it, but it is worth doing it because otherwise you just have to maul it. And you can't take South Africa on winning at the front and go into, you know, their seven, hooker, 10, 12, all lining up ready to hit you. It just won't work.
They'll eat you. They'll absolutely eat you. That's exactly what they want. But I was wondering at the time, is it being held back? You know, is it something that they're going to spring on them? Because if you saw against Japan, there was a couple of balls. There was a lot of ball at the tail. There was the one right over the top that went to Farrell. That was a beautiful drop-off move. And then it's been gone, you know. So I'm just wondering if they've tried it, think, actually, we can do this, and then maybe hold back a little bit. I don't know. I hope so, because I tell you, they're not going to win this series by being conservative.
No.
They're definitely
wrong. I think there's a balance there. I think I completely agree from an attack point of view. You need top quality ball all the time. And that, for me, sort of ties in nicely that you think that Jamie George will probably get the number two jersey for the first test because of his quality of throwing. But for me, I think
Ken Owens will get it. I think, I play with Jamie. I think he's phenomenal. He's a great leader. He's such a good hooker. I just think Ken Owens is probably the man at the moment who's going to start.
If you think about from their perspective, at line out time, at set piece time, it'll be interesting to see who they think is the better scrummager as well, because that's obviously a key part of South Africa's game that we need to sort of cut out, really. But line out time, I think you're talking about sort of where they're throwing the ball a lot of the time. So you've got to have that balance of wanting to retain possession, start to maybe challenge them up front at maul time, and sort of show that dominance early on. I think for me, we've not really seen that from the Lions in the game so far, that they've really laid a marker from minute one of that they're the dominant pack. And going into the next game, I think it would be nice to see scrum time, maul time, line-out time, them absolutely blitz the pack off the park, and it gives them a nice little confidence boost going into the first test.
The decision for that hooker role might be based purely on scrummaging. Do you know that? Because, I think Jamie is much better around the field. He's more explosive. I think he's a bit of a nightmare to defend against, one of the Lions' best ball carriers. But there may be the edge for Ken in the scrum. And if you don't have that, if you don't have at least parity in the scrum, you're in big trouble. And that was, I mentioned earlier, one of the big concerns for me against the Sharks just wasn't a dominant scrum performance at all. And that may be, the starting test front row. And there was they had no go forward in the scrum whatsoever. And in the defensive scrum, you could see the Sharks, number eight, was like picking the ball up. He got 10 metres to run into. Into bigger, and again, that's an absolute nightmare, because it's not just that 10 metres made, it's that's a fast ruck ball, and then it's that second wave of absolute monsters from South Africa getting into the next channel.
I mean, I'm a bit of a nose. I was watching the first test from 12 years ago, South Africa, and the first try they scored.
Those long winter evenings must just fly by.
That's what happens in your off season. I've got a new puppy. I've just sat there. But I remember seeing it, and they literally went scrum. They kicked into the corner. They got the scrum 5 yards out, and they went 12 straight up from nine into the thing. Then I think it was Spies around the corner, and then John Smith around the corner, and they scored. And it's, even more so now with South Africa, if they haven't got the game preparation that they want, they're going to go back to basics.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
They're going to kick a lot, and they're just going to put the ball in front of them and go, right, we're going to hit you every time you come out.
If you were that coaching group now, you're sat there going, right, everyone's suddenly, now we're finally coming out of isolation. How are we going to go about, it may not be the prettiest rugby, but how are we going to go about taking the Lions apart? It's going to be dominating at scrum time. They've got a chance to just go after it in training, go after it at maul time, and then just go back to basics. Like you say, big ball carries, nice and simple, and then challenge them under the high ball as well.
It also controls tempo, because they won't want a quick game. No. Two games are altitude. They'll want to slow it down. They want it at their pace. And that's what the Lions can't afford to happen. They can't allow South Africa to get into their own rhythm, tempo, walk to the line outs, maul, and then walk again. It won't work.
That tempo point is interesting, because I thought against Japan, you could see the Lions, there was a marked increase in their tempo. It was a big thing. They were like running to the lineouts. They were, as soon as their penalty was there, they were kicking to touch. If there was a tap, it was a tap and go. So you could see them, they could see the mind's eye of the coaches going, South African are going to pick a monster pack. They're just going to pick mutants and as many as they can across the back line as well. And they're not going to have the time, to work on the more intricate plays. And it's not really, their best suit anyway. So we're going to try and up the tempo to drag them around the park a bit and do their legs. And again, I don't think we've seen that sort of tempo again since that first game, that is something they need to be thinking about, because the South Africans will certainly be trying, the Springboks will be trying to slow everything down.
And just talking of sort of with tempo, and you mentioned the back three, who has impressed you in terms of back three?
They all have, actually.
So if you were picking your back three,
it is so difficult. And I love watching them all play as well. And I think you've got there's a balance to the back three that you have to figure out as well. And I think that is quite difficult, because they're all putting their hands up. You would thought after the first two, three games of this tour, you go, right, Josh Adams is locked down. That's, he's done that. There's no question there. Then you see the sort of, the performance that Reece Samet had. And I, last time I love the way he plays. I love having that electrifying pace on the wing. Mm-hmm. And there's also something about those two guys are just, they're riding a wave at the moment. And you think, there's something about the Lions, and we've seen it in tours gone by. You go, when you've got a player like that, or players like that, get them on the field. Yeah. It doesn't matter about their history. It doesn't matter what they've done for their country, actually. When you have them on that and they're on fire, just keep them. And I know there's Josh Adams has scored so many tries, and some of them are gimmies. But there's something about scoring a try if you're back three as well. You're just... it just elevates your confidence. And it's sort of the more you try, the more you score, the more opportunities you'll get to, because yeah. you're just ravenous for it. So you've got those two guys. Then you've got, you know, pick one out of Liam Williams and Hogg. Like, I think he'll go with Williams, but you'd lose something if you don't have Hogg on the team as well, in a big way. And then, you know, I thought Watson was exceptional yesterday. Yeah. Like, really, really exceptional. And I'd almost disregarded him because the other two guys were playing so well. He's right back in there now. Yeah. And it's like, his footwork, his size, everything about him, I thought it was phenomenal. And then Van der Merwe as well. You know, he's, you know, you said at the top of the show, he's been exceptional. I think he's super physical, and Gatland will like that, so he's in for a shout with that. But I do think he sort of strikes me as a sort of player that works really, really, he really stands out against the teams that are below excellent, where he has some flaws in his game, and passing is definitely one of them that would show up at test level. You know, listen, he's a test player, but at Lions test level.
I think I agree with that, in the sense that I think he is someone who defensively I would worry about him. I think there's a couple of clips in the Six Nations where he just got exposed, and it's not the one-on-one tackling, of course. He's a big man, he's good at that. It's more the decision-making of when to press, when to hold off. And I thought he got caught again in the game in midweek. He struggled in that sense. But for me, you have to play Liam Williams. And I know I probably bang on about it all the time on the show. People are bored of hearing it. But Liam Williams has to play because of his aerial skills. And I would have him at 15. Just, you know, I think Hogg's a fantastic player, but the game is going to be won in the skies. And yeah.
Do you think you could slip Hogg on the wing, or would that not work?
You'd have to put Liam Williams on the wing and put Hogg at fullback. But I just have this feeling. I think you have to have Liam Williams there, and I would go Josh Adams and Anthony Watson, and then all three of them are very good in the air. And that's a big part of it, as well as having the speed of Anthony Watson, the finishing of Josh Adams.
Yeah, I think he'll go with Liam Williams as well. I could understand why he does it. I think Hogg on the counter attack is slightly better, but then, you know, 4 years ago he changed the tour. Yeah. You know, he is ambitious, and you know he's got guts, and he'll try things, which is phenomenal. But you're right. You definitely need that aerial dominance. You know, every time you've ever played South Africa, your coach will say, we have to dominate the air with this gang, and if you don't, we're not going to win. So, you know, and I think, you know, he's tried and tested. He's a brilliant player. It's just, you're leaving out Hogg, and I'm like, oh, that's so disappointing. Normally, if it was under, you know, other circumstances, you'd go, listen, how do we get him into the team somewhere else? You know, can we find him a place in the wing? But the competition is so strong. You've got out-and-out wingers that know that job, you know perfectly, and they're just playing too well not to pick the guys you mentioned. You know, whether it's Watson or whether it's Reece Amott on the other wing, I'm fairly agnostic about it, but there's something about Reece Amott's just electric sprinter's pace that there's a real comfort in that. And you know, that's a part of my kind of experience as a you know, a player with Leinster in Ireland. I played on one wing for years with Dennis Hickey on the other, and Dennis was like a proper sprinter speed. I remember my sisters always used to say, you know, they'd be watching the game, and when Dennis got the ball, it was like someone press fast forward, you know. And they never said that when I was on it, let me tell you. But having that comfort of having someone that, you know, gets the ball in any space and finishes, you know, there's a real confidence in that right the way through the team.
And that's where I think Josh Adams, for me, I saw some stat the other day. I think every league he's been in, he's been the top try scorer tournament. And, you know, you need people who are going to score your tries, ultimately. It's a simple thing to say, but you can't just go play South Africa and think you're just going to win through kicking and penalties. When the chance comes, you need him there. And that's why, for me, he has to start. So now, during the course of the series, subscribers to the official British and Irish Lions app powered by Vodafone can vote for the player of the series. So after three games, who for you guys is leading the charts? Who's been the man of the series so far?
It's a little early in the series, but I suppose it's people putting themselves in a position to have big performances when it counts, which is... you know, which is in the test matches, because all of this is really window dressing when it comes to it. So it's about, one, putting themselves in a position to get in the team, and also having a kind of a body of work that gives them confidence to be able to perform during the test series. So like, and we've spoken about all these guys before. I think Tyke Byrne certainly is a player who's, you know, produced each time he's played for the Lions so far. I think Jamie George has done really well as well. But listen, standout by a million miles is Josh Adams. You know, he scored about 40 tries in the last four games. Like, he's on top of everything. He's created tries as well. His basics have been really good. He's just, you know, we said it earlier on, you know, he's on fire and, you know, he's riding a wave. And the Lions now have to, you know, ride that wave along with him and make sure, you know, whatever their sort of practice moves are, that they're ensuring that he's getting, you know, time on the ball. How many, you know, actions can he have over the course of a game? And I know that sounds silly, but, you know, my own experience, again, playing in an Irish team that had Brian O'Driscoll for so long, a lot of our plays were, how do we put Brian in space so we can make the best of his talent, and or how can we use him as subterfuge to, you know, take players out of position to make room for others. And listen, Josh Adams is in having such an exceptional series to this point. They need to be thinking about how can we get him the ball.
Mm. For me, he's obviously a standout. What about yourself, mate?
I think Tyke Byrne for me has been the standout. I know there's a name, Tom Curry, for me hasn't had his chances yet fully. He's only had, I think he's only played in, has he had one start so far the game?
Yeah, one start.
Yeah, another game for him under his belt. And when the games start to become a little bit tighter and closer, more physical against South Africa, that's when you're going to see the best of Tom Curry. It's not necessarily in these games where you're sort of scoring 70 points. So for me, here and now, it's Tyke Byrne, but I think Tom Curry's the sort of one to watch for me.
Fair, and the fans have voted already, and at the moment Josh Adams is miles ahead, as expected. Yeah. And then it's Hamish Watson, Doohan van der Merwe, and Lewis Rhys-Zammit. So, yeah, head over to the official British and Irish Lions app, powered by Vodafone, to pick your player of the series, and also pick your starting Lions team. So I won't put you on the spot for that now, yeah. Don't worry, it's too early. But
need a bigger notepad.
Yeah, I know. I've got about three things written down here. It's a goldfish memory.
Yeah, it's a bit of doodling, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think since we've reached Cape Town, I think all players are aware that the tests are only around the corner. So, yeah, there's been a few little chats amongst players that, you know, things are getting serious now. You know, with selection and things. So, yeah, there's going to be a noticeable kind of edge to training, you would imagine, in the lead up to Wednesday's game, to Saturday's game. Yeah, I think since we've moved here, I think the focus has definitely shifted a little bit towards, you know, the more serious side of the tour, which is exciting.
Hey, Connor, you must be delighted to get the first part start. Hope it all goes well at the weekend. Just was looking at the, you know, a zone with Owen and Finn being out there. Elliot Daly might be able to cover a bit of out half, but have you mentioned to Warren that you're more than and willing and able to step up if you're needed in that position?
Yeah, I think with the game just gone, you know, you need to be quite adaptable in terms of being able to play multiple positions. So yeah, in the lead up to the last game, my notebook on one side of it was filled of what passages or positions to take up from 10 and who to hit off starter play. So yeah, I've... I have that in the back of my mind as well. I think, you know, with the Lions tour, you know, anything can happen. And, you know, if you need to step in there, then it would be, you know, it'd be kind of nice to do. And you know, you got to make sure you're prepared for a few eventualities. So, yeah, I reminded him that I played there a little bit in autumn and went OK. But, yeah, if it needs to happen, then, you know, you need to be ready to step in. So, yeah, they control line source, control all sorts of curveballs, especially this one, with the way the things are in the world. So yeah, ready to go.
Warren, kind of given what Warren said about the strength of the South African A team, how close to a test intensity will this be? I mean, given it's most likely to be your first real test on the tour.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty much a test match. If you look at their lineup, it's going to be a really intense game. It's going to be a trial run for the tests, or almost a fourth test. So, yeah, like I said, since we've arrived in Cape Town, I think players have switched into a little bit more serious mode in terms of our prep and the edge that we have in training. And now having seen the South African A lineup, it's only going to sharpen our focus even more. It's going to be a real battle. So yeah, it's almost like a four test for us. With the lineup that they've selected. So a massive challenge and you know, good prep for what's to come.
So now it's time for our Bock on the Ground, Scott Brits. How are you, mate?
Guys, fantastic. Watching the Wimbledon, and then I've got the Euros tonight. So what a fun-filled Sunday.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, you're all in white as well, looking fantastic, ready to play yourself.
Yes, I'm ready. That's the outfit of the day. Go big. Enjoy Wimbledon. We've got cucumber sandwiches. I've got
cucumber
a Bloody
sandwiches.
Mary.
You sound English.
and proper scones with strawberry jam and cream.
Nice. Well, look, we won't keep you for too long there. It sounds like you want to get back to that. But apart from hearing what you're eating for lunch, how are things in South Africa? What's the latest there?
Well, Goody, since the last time we spoke, COVID is now running wild in the Bok camp. We have one false positive test with the Lions, and it's just, I don't know what I'm allowed and not allowed to say what's happening in the Bok camp, but it's been a week.
You can tell us. What are the boys telling you?
No, it's quite with all these protocols and guys getting tested positive, coaches testing positive. It's been a week of improvisation. What's the right word?
Say it in Afrikaans. Improvisation. I can just get it out.
Quite a bit during the week. So it's not great for training or preparing for the Lions. But I mean, yeah, it's COVID times and you have to improvise.
So are you concerned for the preparation for the South Africans at the moment? Is it a real worry?
Yeah, I mean, not playing a game this weekend is quite a nightmare. Luckily, on a positive note, we can't get any injuries, I guess. but I think it's both ways. I mean, we want to play rugby. If I look at the Lions game against the Sharks both weekends, it was quite disappointing. I mean, you can't really see... It's they played against a substandard Sharks team, and it's actually sad to see the Lions not getting challenged enough. So they're not getting, I guess they're not getting out of that game what they wanted.
South Africa A, what will be the makeup of that South Africa A side? You know, is it going to be a lot of the starters? Is it just people who haven't had game time? What are we expecting from South Africa there?
I would think, Goody, if I was Rusty and I don't know, or Jock, I would actually, the guys that have been training the last couple of weeks inside the squad that aren't really, didn't have opportunity against Georgia to have another, to have a go. So if that was me, I would do that. I don't know if they're going to do that or give the guys that have started sort of more time on the pitch. But I would guess Jock would put the guys that was on the fringe to put up their hand and say, okay, give me a go kind of thing.
And you'd hold back then the guys who are going to start in the test series, you'd just wrap them in cotton wool or look after them in that regard?
Yeah, well, there's, unfortunately, the preparation isn't ideal. So I would say, okay, fine, maybe we'll from his perspective, I know you want a strong start, but you would say, okay, fine, we'll get better as the series progresses. So I'll make sure that the other guys that's been training for the last 6 weeks or 5 weeks, give them a go, try for them to soften up the boys a little bit. And then from that perspective, give the guys that's had a go, played one test match, you know, you throw them in and hopefully they'll perform with limited preparation.
Mate, one of the things that we were discussing earlier, and we were a little bit disappointed in Saturday's performance with the Lions, was the lack of aggression and physicality. It just seemed to be a little bit below what it should be, especially thinking what they're going to come against the Springboks in the first test. You know, do you have a view on that? What did you think? Did you think they were off? Do you think they're building?
Shane, I actually don't know. They gave, still put 70 points behind... behind the Sharks, and for me it was still, they gave away some easy tries, but the physicality was up there. It wasn't the same as last weekend with the Sharks. that I will agree with. But no, I don't think so. I think they will front up when the big games come. I mean, it is weird times. But I must say, they still smashed the Sharks. From my perspective, I was actually disappointed with the physicality, except bar one or two plays from the Sharks' perspective. But I mean, the gain line, the Sharks couldn't get past it.
And Scott, what one thing we were sort of discussing earlier is obviously South Africa being in isolation at the moment, and they're sort of just coming out and having that sort of shortened time frame to prepare for the test series. How do you think they're sort of going to play? Do you think they're going to tighten up and focus on sort of scrum and set piece dominance, or do you think we'll see the South Africa we did at the World Cup?
Jack, I don't think they can change much. I mean, the prep has been disrupted. With COVID, a lot of the boys had to train with weights in their room and do like a Zoom kind of fitness. So Andy Edwards was in charge of that to make sure the guys are actually fit and ready to what standard they can be. Training pitch on the time was disrupted through all the things that happened in camp. So no, I do not think they'll change anything from what they did at the World Cup. I think we're going to have a big focus on our set piece from a line-out, scrum, mauling, keep it tight kind of perspective, and we're going to ask sort of Andre and Willy to lead from that perspective. But yeah, I don't think they'll change much.
Well, Scullet, we'll let you get back to your cream teas and salmon. Thanks for joining us. It was great to see you, and we'll see you soon.
Lots of love, boys. Cheers, and everyone, man. Out there.
Cheers.
Cheers, pal.
Bye.
So yeah, it was nice to catch up with Scott Brits, who's having a tough life out there, clearly. But Shane, just about your experiences, obviously 2005, you went on the Lions tour. What do you sort of remember from that tour?
I loved it. I loved the Lions because I sort of grew up in a household where there was this, you know, romance about it as well. And my dad is from New Zealand. And so I was, you know, being told stories about Tony O'Reilly, you know, touring out there as a 17-year-old, and you know, my dad listening to it on the radio when he was a kid, and you know, rugby fanatic, and a house where it was all about rugby. And then all the way through, you know, Ireland has this great connection with the Lions, and I'm not sure about you guys, I'm a bit older, but the 97 tour and, you know, Keith Wood and Living with the Lions, that sort of then kind of re-energized it for everyone. And then, like, you know, a few years later, I was playing for Ireland. So it was, you know, it was a live option all of a sudden. So it was honestly, you know, probably the biggest thing in my career to certainly at that point was to be picked for the Lions. So I was, you know, so delighted. And I remember myself and Dennis Hickey found out at the same time, and we went out that night and we sort of made a pact, and we said, well, listen, you know, we don't know if we're going to be, you know, test starters. We, you know, we want to be, but there's a lot of people on the tour. We're saying, well, we're going to buy into everything about the Lions and contribute to it, and not, you know, to savor the experience, but also recognize that the Lions isn't about the individual at all. You know, we're all motivated to get in the test team, but it's not. It's about more than that. It's contributing to the whole piece. So. You know, so we aimed to do that and did aim to. So, you know, I loved being on the Lions tour. Now, it was ultimately a really unsuccessful Lions tour. And, you know, we got spanked in 3-0 in the series. So, you know, that's how every Lions team gets judged. So, you know, that 2005 is a complete write-off for everyone. But it was a massive point in my life, and I was so happy to be involved in it, you know. So it's difficult, you know, to have that kind of complex experience with it. And I would have, you know, would have loved to play in another Lions tour, because I think we probably didn't have the balance quite right.
I was going to say, because there's a lot made of that tour and having a complete divide between the teams and having different coaches for different teams there. What was it like, though, in that sense? Did you have time to bond with the players? Did you get that Lions experience of socialising together with everyone else?
It was, I think, everything that was done with the Lions tour was the best intentions, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of it was driven by Clive Woodward, and he had success with the England team in the World Cup by being exacting with logistics and how, you know, not leaving anything to chance, and, you know, almost taking a kind of, you know, a somewhere between an accountant's and a sort of a management consultant's view of things, and that worked for England. But the Lions is a different thing. So it didn't quite work for us in terms of, you know, the I suppose, you know, the bond of the team. And listen, there was a bond of the team, and but not quite. And listen, I was, you know, at fault as well that, you know, we just didn't have. I had a beer at the before we left in Cardiff, and then I didn't have a beer again. I went out with guys, but we didn't have a beer again until after the second test we'd lost. And in retrospect, that probably wasn't a smart thing, because the emotional side of rugby, and not just in the Lions, but in any team you're in, there's an emotional side of it. You need to feel sort of good about yourself and the team. And New Zealand is quite a difficult place to feel good about yourself when you're touring in the middle of winter anyway, you know. And it was a very hostile environment to go into. And I was something that I was never really used to, because I was coming from an Ireland perspective, and I suppose it wasn't ideal, because nobody saw Ireland really as a threat when you toured there. So it was a great welcome. Listen, the lads are here, or we're going to beat them, but we'll have a laugh with them afterwards. Yeah. And Ireland was still in that phase. Whereas now it was the British and Irish Lions, and you know, you'll know this from your English experience. It's more hostile when you go into different environments, because you know England have been a threat, and they were the world champions at that time. So, and we were playing against a brilliant New Zealand team. That's maybe one of the best teams ever. So all those things came together to mean we didn't have a successful tour.
It's always a toss up, isn't it, for coaches and teams, for having a few beers together and having a few nights out over the course of a tour or pre-season or whatever, and the sort of impact it will have on you physically and the sort of professionalism. But also, it's for me, it's always so important, as you say, bringing guys together, new guys that need to get to know each other, having those stories and bringing the sort of emotional feel into the group. And I think that's where having a few beers together and having a couple of nights out can have such a positive impact, and sometimes for me outweighs the sort of the significance of the impact it can have on you physically.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, my career sort of spanned professionalism almost, you know, so early days when I was playing, you know, we were out after every single game, and we, like, you know, had brilliant time, but we paid a price for it as well, you know. With Leinster, we won a Celtic League, the first, the inaugural one, and we just smashed it for then like 2 weeks, literally 2 weeks, and we like sort of blew our chances in Europe because of the physical toll it took on us. And then I think we learned a little bit from, you know, that England side that just seemed to us from the outside so incredibly professional, and just, you know, every I dotted, every T crossed. And, you know, you would have heard of the, you know, stories coming out of the way they were training and the way they were looking after themselves. And they ultimately won the World Cup based on that. So I think there was almost a flip, you know, all the way to the other side, where we're thinking this, you know, the whole social side of things, there was no benefit into it. And I think now the balance...
There's a balance.
You can see it. Like, I keep on talking about this sort of emotional element to rugby. And, you know, all the training that everyone does, the tactics, you know, the personal development. But if you can see, if the team that isn't emotionally connected and doesn't provide that emotional performance in the biggest games, they generally don't win. You know, if there's not that emotional side of things.
And I know we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago about the Premiership final, but you could see that in Harlequins when they played Exeter. Exeter looked a little bit deflated. They won it before, they didn't want it. But you see, talk about that emotional energy. That was there in excess, really, for Harlequins. They just didn't know. You could tell from the first minute that they believed and wanted to win that trophy. And it does make a massive difference, as you say.
And you can't rely on it. It can't be what gets you through. Like, you're not going to win a league by, you know, relying on emotional performances. Yeah. You know, each week, but so you have to have all the other stuff as well, but there has to be a reserve there of emotion for those biggest occasions if you want to maximize your performance. And it's difficult. That's why it's difficult, you know, to win a domestic trophy and win Europe, you know, 1 week after another, because you have this massive emotional outpouring to win a trophy, and there's definitely a lull then, you know. So to try and get back up to an emotional state that drives your performance a week later, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I think everyone needs a reason why. You know, it won't work just through being paid more than other people or anything like that. It's purely your reason why. You know, why is it that Quinns were so, you know, energetic, or, you know, could get over the line, because they had something dragging them through. You know, Exeter We don't know what was missing from them, but they didn't have it. But it's the same with any football, rugby, cricket, anything. If the team has a real purpose, a reason, then it can drag you through. And you can't rely on just emotion, of course, but it can really help you in those
different
moments.
Really interesting. It's one of these intangibles that it's very hard to put your finger on. But you know, I'm sure you've had a sort of similar experience. When we won the Heineken Cup for the first time, Leinster, I remember 6 months before that, were absolutely being written off. You know, we knew we had good players, but we hadn't, you know, performed the way we should. And it looked as if we were going to have a complete non-issue of a season, and we turned it around. And it just, something felt like this was meant to be. And like, I don't believe in destiny or anything like that, but it just felt like, hang on, we were on this journey together. And I remember, you know, Sexton saying it in a, you know, before the final, saying, you know, this is, we were meant to win this, you know, and for him, especially coming in the semi-final, this is the way he, you know, performed in that match, the fact that it was against Munster, and then, you know, we go into a game against Leicester. It was just, it did feel like there was something there. Now, you know, that one, and that was enough to get that extra, you know, level of performance out of what we were doing. So, it was very important then, and it's a thing that we have, you know, we didn't have quite right in the 2005 Lions for, you know, for some of the reasons I mentioned. But it is one thing that Gatlin seems to be able to, you know, develop. You know, whether that is inherent in him or the way the team, the backroom team that he brings together. You know, there was a big departure the next Lions series in South Africa. You could see that it was a very different feeling around the camp than there had been in 2005, I think. And some of that comes with success, but I think there was more to it than just that.
Well, I mean, for me, the Lions is so special. That 1997 documentary, Final Walk, was obviously the best video ever made. You know, and we can all, we watched it 100 times. Yeah. And it made it so special. And I think, I've not been on a Lions tour, but ultimately, bringing together teams, players together so quickly, you have to have an enjoyment level. You have to have a socialising. And it's going to be very hard for the boys at the moment out there to do that. But they're in a bubble, which means they have to spend a lot of time together, but they won't be having that fun,
you know? Yeah,
that entertainment is a hard bit. And it sounds stupid, you're there to do a job to win the Lions, but the more fun you have as a group going out doing things, the better you'll get on, the better you'll be on the field.
Do you know the other big factor, I think, in retrospect around the 2005 Lions, was there wasn't enough players that were used to success against the All Blacks. Now, you know, the team was, you know, largely made up of England players that won the World Cup, but I think their peak was at that World Cup, and you know, they weren't as good, any of them really, as they had been, you know, 2 years before, even 2 years before that. And that's not, you know, sort of being harsh, it's just, you know, that's where they were in their cycle, and that's why they won the World Cup. And then you had Irish players, we'd never beaten New Zealand. Like, we'd never beaten New Zealand. I don't know, Scotland at that time, you know, how many times has Scotland beaten New Zealand ever? Not many. And Wales as well. It wasn't as if they were turning them over. So there wasn't a huge amount of experience of beating New Zealand, less so in New Zealand. And, you know, that was a big thing, I think, for the England team in 2003. In preparation of that World Cup, they went down, you remember, the summer before and beat New Zealand. That was like, all right, it's on now. Mm. They know how to do that. They've been down there. They've beaten New Zealand in their own backyard. They can win the World Cup. And I think that instilled a belief, which we didn't have. And certainly I think I didn't have as an individual, you know, that was on that tour, even though we were saying all the right things and I was, you know, thought I was feeling it. But in retrospect, if you haven't done it before, it's, you know, it's very groundbreaking to do it. So that's no longer an issue, and it's certainly no longer an issue on this tour.
And it would be remiss of me not to ask you if you've got any dirt on Shawnee while he's not here. You must have something on him. What was he like when he first came in? Was he as bullish and loud as he is now?
He tells all the stories himself. You know, he rats himself out. But listen, Shawnee was an absolute breath of fresh air when he came into Leinster. He was always a bit of a dog, you know. But I do remember I got tapped up by the coach then was, I think, Cheka, who was super tough on him, you know, super tough on him because he knew how good he was. And Alan Gaffney, I think, was a back coach. And Shawnee was sort of, we had at the time a sort of real weird training area where we would have some of the academy lads would be sort of in about, and Shawnee was bouncing around. I didn't really know who he was. and got pulled aside by Alan Gaffney, and he said, like, you know, you've got to, this guy is the real deal. He is, you know, he's going to be in the squad soon, and keep an eye on him. And I said, like, is there any plans to bring him in? But he had his hand in a cast. And he said, like, we can't get him in because he keeps on breaking his hand off people's heads. He, at underage level, I think he broke his hand off someone's head in an under 21 game, healed up, came back, broke his head, a hand off of someone else's head like a couple weeks later. And then, listen, when he came into training, he did not hold it back. He was one of those guys that you knew, like, he didn't, he wasn't going to take an ounce of a step backward from anyone, even as, like, you know, a 20, 21-year-old, you know, against, you know, older, you know, well-established internationals. He was straight into the mix, you know, throwing haymakers. And he never stopped. He's still doing it now. He's just doing it in a different way.
Yeah, one of my mates at Irish was saying that he's still the number one for getting his scraps at training. He's like always...
A hothead, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah. Listen, he's... But, you know, you have to have that. You know, you need a little bit of dog, and you need it in training as well. And our best training sessions were where we were, you know, there was a few punches thrown, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm waiting to hear the story of a young upstart basically chins him in training. And
oh, yeah, wouldn't that be so good?
Because that would, so honestly, it'd be a complete mic drop.
Yes.
And Jack, how's your rehab getting on, mate?
Yeah, no, good, thank you. Just chipping away at it, really. It's always slow and steady at this sort of middle phase that I'm at the moment, building the strength back up in the knee and just trying to get sort of to that point where I can run again, which would be nice to lace up some boots and get back outside rather than in that gym and sort of turning more and more see-through and pale by the day. But might have to line up a couple of sunbeds before I'm back outside. Might burn instantly otherwise.
Vitamin D, eh? So it's wonderful for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, there we are. Well, that's all we have time for this week. Thank you for watching and listening to the House of Rugby. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Emil.
Thank you very much.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.